Friends, as was announced by the first speaker, the subject of our lecture today is overcoming karma. Now this term, overcoming karma, is commonly known to people in the East, and as was pointed out, it is understood to be free from karma, to becoming karma-less, and to free oneself from the round of birth and death. But before we turn to consider how do we really bring about this freedom from karma, let us first acquaint ourselves with what karma is. Now karma, as we know, is the great law of action and reaction. It is the law of cause and effect. And so, we know that every action has its consequence, its effect. And so, every action that we do, it is going to bring to us certain consequences, for good or evil, to more or less extent. Now this karma, we are told, is the law which is not a mechanical law. It's not just a Newton's third law of action and reaction. It's a law which is adjusting each effect to its cause in a most equitable, wise and intelligent manner. And we are told that therefore we are going to reap the effects of our own actions as well as effects of the action of other beings who constitute that body to which we belong. So, we reap or we share in good or evil fortunes of our family, of our race, our nation, our community, because we are a unit to which all these people belong and we share this karma. And karma, we are told, is a law which is no respecter of a person. It works for all beings. It cannot be propitiated or set aside. It works on various planes of action, physical, psychic, mental, spiritual. All these planes are subject to karma. And one more thing that we have to remember, that this is a universe which is governed by one more law. And what is that law? It is the law of interdependence. Each one of us has got a role to play in the work of the world. No one is useless, no one is utterly to be condemned. Each one is capable of playing some role, some contribution in keeping the world in motion. And this thing works perfectly well in lower kingdoms. You can see there is an interdependence working out beautifully. There is a balance maintained by nature in lower kingdoms. But when we come to the human stage of development, something happens. Man has a mind. Man has a mind which is different from those of animals. He can think and choose. He is a free will being. And so, unfortunately, what happens is that this mind and the power of choice can be misused by a person by mistaken ideas, and he may act in a very separate manner, try to do acts which are going to bring about his own pleasures, his own enjoyment, irrespective of what happens to others. And one really uses other people as stepping stones to rise above. And in the process, what happens is that you disturb the harmony which prevails in this world. And when you disturb the harmony, it's natural that the law of karma will then step in and bring to you the consequences. And you feel those consequences as pain. It's like a branch which is by force brought down. If you leave it, it is going to try to get back to its original position. So karma tries to restore the harmony and we feel the effects as punishment or pain. So in that sense, karma also becomes the law of reward and punishment. Law in which we see that if you do good, good comes back to you. If you do evil, evil consequences must follow. And yet we are told that the law of karma is absolutely just, unerring, and impeccable, and it is also merciful. In what sense is it just? We are told that the law of karma is just because, unlike human law, it takes into consideration so many aspects as to what is the state of mind of the person when he committed. Was it in self-defense he committed a murder? Was it a deliberately planned murder, cold-blooded murder? It takes into mind the state of man at the time of an action. It takes into consideration what is his knowledge level. Is he simply an infant making some error? Or someone knowledgeable, someone who is walking the spiritual path making the error? It takes into consideration this also. It takes into consideration the fact that we always act with certain motive. So what is our motive? Externally it might be a very good act. We might have some vested interest, vicious motive. It takes into consideration motive as well. So all these are taken into account, and also each one of us is struggling in life. There is a load of past karma which we are trying to settle the score, as it were, by paying off the debts. And if the load is heavy, even that is taken into consideration when karma brings to you the consequences. So it's a just law, and also it is a merciful law. It's merciful because we have, for so many past incarnations, created so many bad actions, of course good as well, but karma doesn't precipitate on our head all our karma in one go. It brings to fruition only a portion of the vast accumulated karma. It's that portion for which you are equipped. Now this is very, very important to bear in mind. Karmic stamina is there for each one of us to deal with the situation in which we find ourselves. So karma is therefore merciful. It doesn't give you more, anything more than what you can bear. So this is something which we need to remember. And yet, what happens is that we are unable to see this cause-effect linkage in all the situations. If we have overeaten, we get a stomach upset. And we are able to see that, yes, I have overeaten and I have got a stomach upset. And likewise, many things you are able to see in this very life, that I have done this and this is the consequence. So we are able to see a just law working. But this doesn't always happen. There are so many things that happen in our life, and if we try to look for the reason, the cause, as to why that suffering comes to me, we are unable to find the cause in this life. And many times we do see very just, upright, good, honest people suffer terrible, terrible calamities, and one wonders what is it that they have done to suffer in this matter. And then people with a limited understanding of karma, what do we say? It is my kismat. It is destiny. Meaning thereby, it is something which befalls a man from somewhere outside by some external being, and it's something in which I have no hand, and I am being unjustly punished. Now, when you feel that you are getting unjustly punished, you are going to rebel. Even a child doesn't like to be punished if he knows that it is punished for no fault of his. We are adults, and if something comes our way for which we cannot find any reason, we would want to then rebel against the so-called law of karma if it has been, you know, manipulated or worked out by some external being. And we would then want to somehow escape. And that is sometimes understood as overcoming karma, becoming free from karma. But that is a false understanding of how to overcome karma. But when this sort of a limited understanding is there, what happens? You would try to find an escape to get away from the unfavorable or unpleasant circumstances in which you find yourself. For example, if somebody is finding the office atmosphere totally crazy, people not cooperating, not treating him well, then obviously he would want to get away from that environment. He would look for maybe change of department, change of boss, maybe even change of job. Now, absolutely nothing wrong in trying to find another congenial environment in which you can work with happiness and enjoy your working and earn your livelihood. Nothing wrong with that. But what if this man in this life is the man who in the past had been in the position of authority? Maybe he was a zamindar, or he was boss or CEO, CIO or whatever. And he himself had been unkind to people. He had been inconsiderate to the subordinates. He had exploited them. He had manipulated them. He had ill-treated them. Now, law of karma brings him into an environment. Now he is in a subordinate position. And he has a lesson to learn from this environment as to what it is to be in that subordinate position. And he is trying to run away from it. He is trying to find another environment, get away from this environment in which he can learn the lesson. And sometimes, it's not fault with the other people. The fault is within ourselves. Suppose this person who is finding the office atmosphere oppressive, this person is someone who is selfish, ambitious, using other people as stepping stone, as we said, or he is always trying to take away credit of other people. He is a work shirker. He is really not having any consideration. He is not a team player, as management jargon would say. He is not a team player, always wanting to remain in the forefront. And wanting some work to be done by somebody else, while he does all pushy jobs or not do any work at all, and yet get promotion. Now, if this is the kind of attitude you have, then no matter where you go, no matter how wonderful an environment is, how kind and nice people are around you in another job, sooner or later, with this sort of attitude, you will find yourself getting isolated. You will become socially unacceptable. And you realize, therefore, that the fault is not with other people, the fault is within myself. You need to introspect, you need to find out why is it time and again I begin nicely, but soon, as the time passes, I become isolated. So you need to introspect and bring about correction, bring about change in your attitude, make necessary changes, and then, of course, you can hope to improve the environment, improve the situation. And yet, at times, we do suffer certain setbacks, terrible setbacks sometimes. There is unrequited love. Someone stabs you in the back. There is a natural calamity in which you lose your near and dear one. There is a huge financial loss, or loss of your name, fame, position. All that is suddenly taken away. Your name is involved in some sort of a scandal, sexual or monetary or otherwise. You are shaken, and suddenly you feel that world doesn't have anything to offer. It is something very oppressive, and I need to get away from this environment. And as a rebound, as a reaction, people then tend to look for solution in spiritual life. And they would go to the other extreme, in the sense that they would probably run away to the forest, or they would want to become a monk, or get ordained in certain spiritual order, and so on. Now, what are you doing by this? By this, you are running away from the duties which you are supposed to be discharging to your family, to your society, to your nation. You are running away from the circumstances which your karma has brought you or put you in. And we are told that no real true guru will accept a disciple who is abandoning his duty, running away from his obligatory duties, and who has not carried out whatever is necessary as a being who is belonging to a family, nation, etc., and who has not taken permission of the family members. just goes away. Pay for some of the missing people. So many advertisements are there, missing, missing. Thousands of people simply disappear, leaving behind the grieving family members. Now, if this is a situation, this is the attitude with which you are working, then we are told that what is going to happen is that if the relinquishment or the reaction was really a genuine turning point, as it happened in case of Valyanuddhana. Valmiki was a rishi who had a turning point in his life. But that sort of a turning point doesn't come very easily for most of us. Suppose this was merely an impulsive action on his part. That inner relinquishment had not come about. Then what happens? He will join the order, become a monk and so on. But after joining it, he will find in his mind all the time getting drawn to the world, drawn to people he has left behind. Empty desires will well up in his mind. In his mind, he will be coveting people, coveting things. Lot of scandals then come up in those spiritual circles, and all this is because he was not really prepared, and he has taken this extreme step of renouncing the world. And then, obviously, the consequences are great, because he has vowed to walk the spiritual path and he is committing crimes mentally. So Jesus, what he says, of the old time it was said, do not commit adultery. But he says, I tell you, anyone who looks at the woman and wants to possess her is guilty of committing adultery with her in his heart. So mentally, you have physically just gone to the monastery or somewhere, but mentally you are committing sins. So this is not the true way, right way of really overcoming the circumstances, overcoming the karma. And if these are the terrible sufferings which befall people, sometimes people take other extreme reaction, other extreme step. They feel that this whole life has become futile, I have nothing to live for, let me get away, let me put an end to it. And we have a free will, we have a choice. And they then take the step of committing suicide. Now this is a terrible thing to do, because suicide is going to bring an end to your body. Death is not an end. Death has put an end to your body, but the inner man lives on. If you were destined to live some 70, 80 years and you commit suicide in your early life, the inner man is active, living, conscious in the invisible atmosphere, in his invisible garment. And he is going to be conscious and seeing his near and dear ones suffer, seeing their pain, and now he doesn't have even a body through which he can interact with them, give his helping hand to help them to take care of and, you know, bring about some alleviation. It's a terrible thing. And in that invisible atmosphere, he would remain for that term of life, and if he regrets, if he feels that I have done an error and tries to vicariously live, you know, cases of possession and things like that, if he regrets life, tries to vicariously live through others, he will be drawn to those Sian's rooms and Sian's practices and so on, and karma created would be far more terrible than would be the suffering he would have otherwise faced if he had lived. So, suicide is never, never, never the solution. You are equipped karmically to deal with the situation. Have peace, have patience. Look at the scriptures. Try to bring calmness to your mind. People are there to help. Even if people are not there, your inner self is there to help. So, that is never the solution. And sometimes people take a very limited view of karma. Karma, we said, is the law of action and reaction. So, to become free from karma, I do not make any action, and so I become free from karma. There is not going to be any reaction. But can we ever remain karmaless? Can we ever remain without doing some action? I will not do action is also an action at a thought level. We are all the time acting. that they can refrain from doing actions, or at least refrain from cultivating human relationships, which is going to bind you. They will be very scared to get emotionally attached to people. They will want to not get entangled in this closeness and intimacy. And so what happens is that if somebody can give them a gift, they will not take that gift, or if even if they take it, they will see to it that they give you something back in return, as it were, to settle the balance, settle the score. Or if help is required, and somebody is offering help, they will not take that help. They will neither give help nor take help, lest they will get entangled in this karmic relation, as though this was their last life and there was no more karma going to be there. We have such vast karma, and this is again a very, very false kind of understanding that we have. We have to do action, certainly. We cannot remain for a moment inactive. What, as Bhagavad Gita points out, what we are supposed to do is to renounce the desire for the fruit of action. Let's not have attachment for the fruit of action. So, see the quotation 3 in your handout. It says, do not perform the proper actions. Action is superior to inaction. The journey of the immortal frame cannot be accomplished by inaction. All actions performed other than as sacrifice unto God make the actor, bound by action. And now we find that karma is something which we cannot really get away. There is, as Buddha says, there is not a mountain place or an ocean or anywhere you can go and you can escape the consequences. It's going to bring us the consequences. And if we realize that I have been rather a nasty person, I have guilty kids, many people, I have persecuted innocent people, I have tormented other people, then some sort of a guilt feeling comes in your heart. You are then desperately looking for solution. What is it that I can do to wipe away my bad action so that evil consequences and technical pain and suffering will not come to me? You will be looking for parihara, looking for something by which you can be absolved of your sins. And you will turn to your scriptures, or maybe turn to Pandit, Purohit, and some of our Pandits have got a solution in their hand for every kind of sin that you have committed. You have killed a cat, no problem. Just make a cat made up of gold, offer to God, and your sin will be forgiven. They would be suggesting certain pujas, ceremonies, rituals, and they say that by doing that, you will be forgiven of your sin. And in Christianity, people say that you have to confess your sin and uphold your belief or profess your belief in the blood of Christ. Christ was crucified on the cross. It was a price he paid for the sins of the world that you can think of. He has already in advance paid the price for all our sins. All we have to do is to declare our belief in the blood of Christ and we will be forgiven. It's very, very simple. And also some people say that if you, God is all merciful, you have to just pray to him, sincerely repent, and God will forgive us. And all the sins will be wiped out. But this is a very, very limited understanding. It's a wrong understanding of working of karma. If you had murdered a person and his family is still suffering, that only bread earner has gone from the family, they are suffering from the loss of their near one. You have persecuted another, he continues to suffer whatever wrong you have done to him. How can your repentance or your confession of your sin, they can entitle you for your forgiveness? This is never, never done. This is a false understanding of how you can get away from your karma, get away from your karmic consequences. And since karma is definitely going to bring to you just in just proportion the consequences, painful or favorable, proportion to what you have done. That is the reason why great teachers of humanity have always told us to be kindly, charitable, exercise forgiveness for the sins of other people. Hatred ceases not by hatred, but by love. Because you know, the karma is definitely going to bring the punishment to the one who has committed sin. And from our side, we can just pity, and our heart should go out and say that, let him have the strength when the karma brings the consequences and learn the lesson from whatever comes his way. And yet, sometimes people suffer so much at the hands of others, they feel curse, as it were, goes out from their heart. Let karma punish him. They know karma works, but they want to hasten. They feel that karma should immediately punish this evil doer. That sort of a desire for punishment of other person, even if he has done something wrong to you, we are told, is not justified. Because karma is definitely going to bring punishment to him, and worse still, some people think that they are going to settle the score. They will take law in their own hand, meet out punishment, and try to take revenge. When you take revenge, you are giving extra punishment to this person. This person is certainly going to be punished for his evil action by karma, and you have not taken law in your own hand, inflicted additional suffering on this person, for which he will be compensated and you will be punished. You are committing a crime. Now, this is something which is very, very lofty, very, very difficult for us to appreciate, but that is the law. And that is why, again and again, we are told, forgive, forgive, and largely forget. If your enemy is trying to, is enjoying a favorable circumstances now, trying to torment you and harass you, try to have a compassionate and kindly feeling towards him. Even if you can't do that, at least do not send out hateful thoughts towards him. Because when you send out these hateful thoughts, this sort of enmity, the tendency to enmity, hatred, is going to be strengthened. And this is going to last for more than 3 lifetimes. But if you refrain, if you pay in kindly way towards the hatred, then each life, from your side, the feeling of hatred is going to lessen at least 1/3 each life. And in 3 lives, you would have settled the bad bondage that you had created with this person. So this is what we are asked to do time and again. And in Dhammapada, Lord Buddha tells us that whatever we are at the moment, in whatever circumstances of life we find ourselves, good, bad, indifferent, he says that all that you are, this is your handout quotation 7, all that you are is the result of what we have thought. All that we are is founded on our thoughts and form of our thought. If a man speaks or acts with an evil thought, pain pursues him as the wheel of the wagon follows the hoof of the ox that draws it. If a man speaks or acts with a pure thought, happiness pursues him like his own shadow that never leaves him. This is very, very categorical, that we have no one else to blame for where we are but ourselves. No need to blame our parents, our family, our society, our government, or anybody outside. Whatever we are, if we find it is not very pleasant, unless and until we had a hand in making them what they are, the circumstances, we would not be born into them. And therefore, it is up to us now to set in motion the opposite type of action, which is going to, if there are defects, if you find corruption, no need to curse corruption. What is it that you are doing in your own daily life? Second motion, the principles of honesty, set an example. And likewise, we are told that there are certain family defects. Families have got peculiarities, nations have got peculiarities. You, as a member of that unit, you have a hand in making it what it is. Now it is up to you to try to eliminate those defects and try to strengthen the noble qualities in the family. And when you do that, we are told that gradually, not only you rise, but even other members of the family will be taken up. That's going to be purification of your emotional nature going to come about. Purification of your mental nature going to come about. And when you have really overcome the tendencies, bad defects of family members, or rather family tendencies, then what can happen? That when the distributive karma strikes, maybe sometimes in the form of some calamity, earthquake, tsunami, cyclone, fire, or something or the other, because you have eradicated those faults and now you have overcome that, you will find that suddenly people will be miraculously escaping, while others who have a hand in making it what it is suffer the consequences. So this is a lesson for us really to learn how not only we have to eradicate our own defects, we have to eradicate the defects of our own family. And yet, settling karma or overcoming karma is not very easy. Because every time we are going to do action, we cannot remain for a moment inactive. That's a very, very fundamental truth. And if we are not going to be able to remain inactive, that's always going to be the consequences going to come. Then how do I really become free from karma? Is there no escape? There is escape. That is what the great beings have taught us. For that, we have to understand how karma takes place. Karma means action. Karma means also the reaction. The law of action-reaction, and karma means action. Now, how does action take place? Before you carry out an action, always there is a thought behind that particular action. And thought arises in the mind. Desires also arise in the mind. Behind, therefore, every action, there is a thought. So always, action originate at the mind plane. Beyond mind, there is no karma. And suppose, what we call our mind, Mr. Crosby says, is nothing but a bundle of ideas. This bundle of ideas are what we have taken, or rather given to, it has been given to us by our society, our family, our education, and so on and so forth. We have been imbibing these ideas. Sometimes we question, but very often we have just accepted them without question. And if you are full of false ideas, then what happens? You are with those ideas going to create false destinies. If you think that I am a separate person from all these other people who are separate, and there is only one life, then you would want to enjoy this life. You wouldn't want to be kindly to other people and all that. I will then miss out on my enjoyment. And you would want to have all the enjoyment even at the cost of others. And all your energy, all your attention is going to be fixed on this sensuous pleasures, comforts, riches, and name and fame. You will run after this all the time. And untamed desires, if one desire is satisfied, 10 more will arise. You have one car, Maruti car, you will be looking maybe for Mercedes-Benz. If you have one bungalow, or one flat, you would be looking for a bungalow, and so on and so forth. Umpteen desires, one after the other. Desires never get satisfied by fulfillment, particularly this sort of lower desires. You are then creating so much vast stock of desires which remain unfulfilled. And when death comes, you have got huge store of unfulfilled desires, and also in trying to meet all your desires, objects of desire, people you desire, you have created so many bad actions, so you have also created a bad balance on the negative side. And naturally, you will necessarily have to come back here. You have created action in company with other people here. It is here you need to come back in their company again and pay off your debts. You have to come back here to enjoy all your vain worldly desires, and get into the vicious circle. The chain of life and death just goes on. And that is what the humanity is caught on. But if we realize that we are not this personality, that we are not our mind, our thought, our body, these things are all the time changing. We are not there. There is something in us which is remaining unchanged. It is the spirit in us, which goes from life to life, garners experience, learns, extracts lessons, and goes on the spiritual journey. We are that spirit. And in spirit, we are told that there is illimitable power. In it are the three Godheads. Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva are there right in ourselves. Power to create, to sustain, to destroy for the purpose of regeneration is right there in us. And that is where there is hope. We need not despair. Even how low we might have fallen, how despised we might be by the whole of the world, in the eyes of the Lord, we are never utterly condemned. There is always hope. And Mr. Crosby beautifully says that we have not lost and can never lose our power to set other and better causes in motion. Why? Because while body, mental nature, etc. will suffer the consequences, spirit within is never touched by karma. And if we start acting from that basis, it has illimitable power by which we can set in motion the causes which are for the good of the humanity, which are for the good and benefit of the whole of humanity. We need to, therefore, attack the root cause, really, and try to eradicate this vast store of karma that we have generated. And if we think that this change of position from being scheming and a very cunning person and persecuting others, we are going to become overnight a saintly person, it's not going to be easy. Because so many past incarnations we have lived in a wrong way. Car has now got a momentum. It's a, as it were, a machine going down the inclined plane. It will require a tremendous, sustained, slow but steady effort on our part to really set in motion causes which can really counteract one source of karma, bad karma that we have generated. We have to set in motion good causes, replace our bad tendency by virtues. And therefore, it is possible to nullify your bad karma. It is possible to neutralize your bad karma. Now, to understand this, we can consider the simple law of physics that if two equal and opposite forces are there, they will tend to nullify one another. Then there is not going to be pull from this direction, that direction, because they are exactly equal and opposite. So if a good karma as well as equally strong bad karma comes to fruition at the same time, they will nullify one another. And that is where the hope is. Because at any given moment, it is not just one bad karma that comes to fruition. Some good, some bad, whatever is there in your kitty comes to settlement. And what we experience is a resultant of the totality of the karma that has come to fruition. And that is why the biblical saying says, charity covereth multitudes of sin. Now, this is sometimes wrongly understood. Our knight seems to go and give away a lot of money in charity. And that's what some of our rich people, they do. Their whole life will be exploiting people, stealing and persecuting them, oppressing them. And then, out of their vast surplus, they will give away some amount in charity. Build a hospital, build a temple, give away some to poor people, needy people. And think that by doing this, they will wipe away their bad effects, because we said that they will try tend to nullify. Now, the other aspect, other important fact that we need to bear in mind is that this is going to happen because the axiomatic truth says that when the lesson is learned, the necessity ceases. But if you remain that brutal person, and continue to have those tendencies, and then give away a vast amount as charity, no doubt it's a good action. It has benefited a lot of people. It's physically, on a physical plane, very good action, for which you will be rewarded, no doubt. You might be born in a rich and comfortable environment, but what happens to your inner nature? You will carry the same brutal, skinny, cruel nature with you, life after life. And in the next life, with that comfortable environment, once again, you will be setting in motion perhaps worse sort of causes, and next time, perhaps you may not be doing charity. So, this is not the correct understanding of how you can nullify your karma. You need to attack the root cause. What is it that is bringing me bad consequences? If it is my bad tendencies, my nature, I need to remedy them. I need to replace my envy, jealousy, pride, hatred by kindliness, compassion, by being helpful to other people. So you need to really attack the root cause. You should not be trying to manipulate karma in mathematical term. So, and in this great task of trying to mitigate karma, we are told that we are also helped by the great compassionate beings, those beings who have perfected themselves. These beings, we are told that they have reached that stage where complete nullification has happened, and they now never act for the ill of anyone, but always, as it were, pour out their good actions for the benefit of humanity. They always do such actions which are for the good of whole of humanity, and they pour all the fruition in that pool of karma, the general pool of karma of the humanity, which is going to lessen the terrible effects that will be faced by the humanity. And that is why we are told that sages, saints, seers, it's thanks to them that the world is not so bad today. It's thanks to them that we are saved from further and far greater misery which otherwise would befall us. They do not take anything as reward for their action. Let their distribution of merit happen among the whole of humanity. That is the mitigation that they are assisting us in. And yet, the thing is that we have created bad karma, we have really bad tendencies. It is up to us to support the soul. We have to pay off our debts. And for paying off that debt, we necessarily have to cultivate virtues. Whatever scriptural injunctions are saying, we need to practice that. And here again, we can make an error. We may think that we will therefore do a lot of punya, meritorious deeds, help, join NGOs, and do a lot of timely acts, and so that I will have a lot of merit in my stock, so that I will have a very favorable birth in the next incarnation, or I may collect so much punya that I can become blemishless and become a deva at some time. Or finally, I can, by my good action, reach the final liberation as many sages and seers have reached. And we are told that all these desires are again spiritual selfishness. If you are going to do meritorious acts so that you will have all these benefits for yourself, it is a selfish spiritual selfishness. Because what happens? 9th chapter of the Gita says that once your stock of merit is exhausted, you might be in the heaven world for immensity of period. But when the stock of merit is exhausted, you will be coming back to earth. You will be again getting caught in that chain of life and death. You may have become a deva, where your purity has now become automatic. You will enjoy that period of peace and peace for immensity of period. But when the new age starts, because of your selfishness, you will again have to come back to earth and on the lower ground. You have chosen to enter into nirvana, become liberated, and attain moksha, and leave the whole humanity suffering, which is requiring your help. Then we are told that again, you may enjoy a lot of nice fruition, peace and bliss, but in the new manvantara, when the new age starts, once again you have to descend and take birth. But there is a great ideal, Bodhisattva ideal, which is given in Buddhism. And Mahayana tradition speaks that there are great beings who, in their immense compassion, even when they have now no need to take birth, out of their divine compassion for the suffering humanity, they do not enter into moksha, they do not enter into nirvana, remain behind and help the whole of humanity. They are remaining in the invisible atmosphere and all the time helping us. And see, quotation 10, what does it say about these bodhisattvas? The bodhisattva who has won the battle, who holds the courage within his palm, yet says in his divine compassion, for others saying this great reward I give, accomplishes greater renunciation. Such beings, have they become free from karma? Yes, of course. They can choose whether to be born or not born. But they will be always taking birth whenever humanity needs them, wherever there is a requirement. They become the embodiers of karma. Nothing compels them. In that sense, they have attained freedom from karma. And what a man has done, Buddha, Shankara, these are the beings who are seeing people like us. What they have done, we can do. Because the same spirit is there in every one of us. And that has never touched our karma. We have to take that position and we are sure that even we can become free from karma, become helpers of humanity. Friends, we have a couple of minutes for taking up your questions on the subject of our lecture.
My first question is, let's take an example where a poor man who's been toiling day and night is trying to earn some money for his family, but he's not able to earn sufficiently enough to take care of his sick mother. So in order to provide medicines for her, a sick mother or any one of the family members, and in order to take care of them, he steals something. And in the process of stealing something, stealing let's say money, or say food for his hungry sister or brother or mother, he's caught. So in this process, he's trying to do a good deed, but at the same time, karma is being, it's not being, God is not, I'm not saying who, but that force is not being fair to him by imprisoning him. Where on one hand, he was trying to do a good deed out of compulsion, he had no choice, but at the same time, his mother or brother or sister also dies and he's also in prison. This is one question. So this, don't you, in this case, I feel karma, I mean that force is being very unfair to that person. This is one. Second is...
We will take one question at a time because time will not be sufficient to take up second. We will take up after the end of the session. The question is, you all heard that suppose there is a poor person who is toiling all the time and trying to earn his livelihood, and there is a sick mother who requires medicine, and so in the process, since he is not earning enough, he is stealing something and he gets caught, and then obviously the law takes its course and he is punished. Now he is trying to do something good, now, but he is punished, he is put in the prison, and of course his mother dies. Now, isn't karma being very, very harsh to this person?
Yes.
Now, obviously the law of action and reaction always acts. There are certain eternal verities which are there. And if you break the eternal verities, consequences are going to come, certainly. But, as we pointed out, karma is not a mechanical law which, because you have done something wrong, so a harsh punishment will come to you. What brings you the punishment of putting you in the prison? It is the human law which puts him in the prison. If some society was there around him, who were sympathetic, who were open, who could see his suffering, who were aware of the requirement of the person, then that need for that theft would not have arisen. It is the failure, it's an act of omission on the part of many other people who were there that has driven him now to commit sin. A sin not to be kept or stealing. But the thing is that this person, his motive was good. He wanted to bring medicine for his ailing mother. But nonetheless, is it something which he was entitled to? He could have worked harder, he could have maybe really borrowed some money from some there are so many kindly people around. He could have done many other things. And worst situation, we are told that sometimes, however hard you may try, sometimes your karma is so heavy that you need to do nothing but finally accept karma. It just the situation is being grim. It's not entitling you to doing something which is socially wrong, ethically wrong. It doesn't entitle you to do that. And if you have committed a theft, your motive was good. To that extent, you are not someone who is really, you know, committing theft in terms of bank robbery, all that for the purpose of luxurious living. That is a real crime. As against this, this motive was good. So punishment from karma is not going to be great. But as far as he is concerned, he is violating the harmony which has to prevail. And imagine, if everyone is in a terrible situation, if we start left and right breaking the law, justifying our action, what society, what a chaos would be created. We need to honor. You know, Jesus also said, give unto Caesar what is Caesar's. You as a citizen of that country need to abide by the law you have got the government because of your karma. And whatever laws are now framed, in that you had a hand. Otherwise you would not be born in that nation, not born in that society. You need to honor those laws. And in some favorable circumstances, if you can, you will be able to contribute in a right way and bringing about improvement in the law, which will not be really harsh, giving up harsh punishment, but rather looking to the root cause. And many times, even in the prison, they try to, you know, they teach you so many skills, they teach you meditation. Maybe in going to prison, he is getting something which otherwise perhaps you would not have got.
Otherwise, what may happen is that by going to prison, it may be otherwise. That is, he may become a criminal. The society converts him into a criminal. Yes, he may be reformed, but alternatively, when he realizes that even after toiling so hard day and night, he's not able to get some medicines or food, ultimately his mother or his family member dies and is imprisoned, that may change his attitude towards the society and he may get converted into a criminal instead of becoming a reformed.
Not necessarily. The friend says that he can, if he is put in the prison, he might become a criminal. Not necessarily.
Not
a change of hearts can come about. Sometimes a thief, that disgrace that comes on your head, really sets you thinking. And the whole society is kind of boycotting you. And you realize that it was not a simple theft. It is something which I violated the whole scheme which is keeping the whole, you know, society going. The world is kept going. Possibility of him becoming a thief and a worse kind of a criminal is his choice. He is taking a fresh choice and turning
the circumstances.
We can never blame the circumstances. No matter how grave are the situation, we are told that spirit within, if you take that position, you have a power to set in motion right causes and make the right choice. But the lower of karma is going to be something which is going to drive you for a long time in the wrong direction. But sometimes you need to turn the corner. We will take up your question after the session. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.